Welcome to the Construction User 2.0 from the Association of Union Constructors. In this podcast, we explore the latest labor trends, industry insights, and important issues in the world of construction. Join us for conversations with industry leaders, subject matter experts, and innovative visionaries as we discuss how we are building the world of tomorrow. Our guest today is the Director of Outreach and Business Development at the Virginia Tech Helmet Lab, the premier research facility investigating how we can prevent head injuries, not just treat them. The lab is currently conducting a study focused on protective headwear for the construction industry, with the potential to revolutionize how our industry protects its workers. With a PhD in philosophy and biomechanics, Dr. Barry Miller and the Helmet Lab are leading the way in researching ways to make our industry safer. We are thrilled to have him on the show today. Please welcome Dr. Barry Miller. Well, awesome. Dr. Barry Miller, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to.
So I always try to keep these sort of fun and conversational rather than just, you know, trogging through just information. And I do that sort of by asking this question up front. What is the last song you had stuck in your head? Like that last earworm that you just couldn't shake free from?
Bang Your Head by Quiet Riot.
That's a little
Bang
on the nose.
Your head. How's that?
I approve. I like that. That's professionally relevant to you. So
exactly. Helmet lab relevant for sure.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, before we get like down into the thick of it, let's talk about the Helmet Lab and, you know, sort of the mission, vision, purpose, history. Tell me about the Helmet Lab for those who aren't aware of it.
Sure. Well, the Helmet Lab is actually a comprehensive injury biomechanics lab. So we do all kinds of injury research. Certainly, we're best known for our concussion research and our helmet ratings. But we're the lab that tests all the Nerf toys for the Hasbro toy company.
Okay.
So, you know, Nerf darts, and, you know, I had little boys, and the real Nerf darts are very different than the fake ones that you can buy because the tips are not nearly as compliant as the real Nerf darts. So anyway, so we test all the Nerf toys for the Hasbro toy company and, you know, help them determine, and are we going to put goggles in the box, or maybe these velocities exiting these, you know, dart guns, et cetera, maybe they're just too high and injuries likely. So we work with those guys. We also are a FAA approved impact testing facility for commercial drones, you know, drones that fly around, deliver products, do light shows. And so in conjunction with our Mid-Atlantic Aviation Partnership group on campus that does more of the flying and the aeronautical piece, we do the impact testing. So in other words, you know, sooner or later, these drones are going to fail, right? And driving your car, they're going to hit you in the windshield, riding your bike, you know, they fail, hit you in the head. You know, so they want to know what's the injury profile look for some of these things and, you know, what should be the rules, guidelines, you know, how big should they be allowed to be made? How fast should they be allowed to go? The geometry, the materials, blade length, blade speed, all these things significantly change injury risk profiles. So we do all the testing for that too. And then lots of other projects, military helmets, a little bit dabble there, but you know, some of the other things I can't talk about, but yeah, we comprehensive injury biomechanics lab. So we study how people get hurt and then we figure out what are the forces associated with those injuries and, you know, how can we lead research that help improve safety or products to eliminate those or reduce those injuries.
I like it. You have a really cool job.
Lots of fun. Oh, I guess I should start with the whole thought of the lab. So way back in somewhere around 2007, the guys down in the equipment room in athletics asked Dr. Duma, and Dr. Duma comes, he's one of the founders of the lab. He comes out of the auto injury biomechanics area, and they asked him, you know, hey, can you help us pick a safer helmet? And you got to remember back in 2007, this is, you know, 17 years ago or so, right?
Sure.
Concussions were kind of a voodoo topic. We didn't know about it. And he said, well, you know, if we could quantify what happens inside the helmet, right, maybe we could get somewhere. And so we started putting sensors inside our football players here on campus. 50 players volunteered to be subjects, and we started collecting data. So every time they had a head impact, we started recording both linear and rotational head kinematics. And we did that for, you know, 4 seasons or so. And we had about 70,000 head impacts. And what makes us unique is that's experimental data. And so when there was an on-field concussion diagnosed by sports medicine, not by us, we paired that with what the helmet data tells us. You know, what was the linear and rotational head accelerations for that player that caused that concussion? And so now we have over 2 million data points alone. And so that became our risk function. So as these rapid head accelerations go up, right, your risk of concussion goes up. And the helmets that better reduce those rapid head movements, linear and rotational head accelerations, get better ratings because they reduce concussion risk. And so that's the premise of how we got started in the whole helmet evaluations, helmet ratings. The STAR rating system is a patented process. And so people can't do what we do. But yeah, that's what we're best known for.
So to that end, I mean, maybe an obvious question. This lab, you're the point of the spear in this area of study, this field of study. Are there anyone else studying? I mean, obviously there are other people interested, the military you mentioned. Are they all coming to you, or are there other organizations doing these studies?
A good portion of the helmet companies come to us. The NFL has their own lab. And the NFL, you know, so BioCore is the company, and they're at University of Virginia. But they specialize in just the NFL players, which is, you know, only 1,200 players.
Yeah.
And so our ratings are a little bit more appropriate for the college, the high school, you know, the middle school, and we have a youth football helmet rating as well. And so we serve the masses. If you were to look at the NFL ratings versus ours, you'd see almost the rank order of the helmets are almost identical. Okay. There might be a little flip-flop here and there because they use a little bit higher energy levels because those players are a little bit bigger, stronger, yeah, faster.
Heavier.
And so, which is appropriate, right? But oftentimes people think they want to buy the best NFL rated helmet. Well, that's not appropriate for 99.9% of us, right? Because we don't play professional football. And so, and if you were an NFL player, then maybe those ratings would be appropriate. But
sure.
Ours are more appropriate for, you know, high school, college, you know, and that's the masses of the football players out there. So
I remember I was just somewhat recently, I had taken up golf recently. I swear this ties back in. I had taken up golf and I was buying some new balls, and I was at a golf shop and I was getting ready to buy these really expensive, really, really nice balls. He's like, how far is your swing? And I was like, you know, 4 or 5 feet. Like, it's, I'm not good. He's like, how fast is your swing? Do you know, we talking, he's like, you shouldn't buy this. You should buy these much less expensive. I was like, but these are nicer. And he's like, not at your swing speed. Like, these are, the design of these are designed for an impact much harder than you're giving it. And just because it can take more doesn't mean it can take less. It's designed. So yeah, I assume that the math on that would be the same, that a helmet designed for heavier impact doesn't make it better for lesser impact. There's going to be more appropriate for lesser.
That is a great point and excellent observation. You can't really optimize, you know, a helmet for high energy and low energy at the same time, right? Because the padding materials are going to be different. You know, a light bump to the head is going to require like pillows. But if, you know, a hard bump to the head, like you were sprinting and you ended up hitting the wall, well, then you'd want mattresses or something more dense, right? So, you know, helmet companies try to optimize the two. You know, they try to have a happy blend, I should say. You know, you got to be able to protect against the catastrophic head injury, but also protect against concussion risk. You know, you could ideally optimize for both, but your helmet would be absolutely huge.
Right.
So it wouldn't be functional. So, but you hit the nail on the head right there. So it does make a difference. What are you testing against or for? And thus, you know, what are you designing for? And it makes a difference. So, you know, as you pointed out.
I like that. I guess that's an interesting, I'd never thought of it like that. So I'm in the military reserve and I've served and I've worn the helmets. And I'll just say, just in my career, the padding we put in them and the weight of them and things has changed dramatically, which leads me to another point. Like when you look at the history of helmets, you know, you can see the old 1920s footballer in his sweater and his leather cap on, or the old aviator helmets, all the way to Archie Manning's helmet doesn't look like Peyton Manning's helmet.
Sure.
Talk to me about the kind of the history of helmets, and what are we doing now that we weren't doing then? What are we getting better at, and what are our opportunities we're chasing?
So the story goes that the whole evolution of helmets started with, I think, President Roosevelt somewhere back in the 40s, I think. So our football players at Yale, Harvard, you know, the Ivy schools, they were getting skull fractures and dying on the football field because they had no head protection. And, you know, football is a pretty violent sport. He's like, you know, we can't have this. You know, we got people going to war, and, you know, we can't have them dying on the football field here in the United States. So he formed a committee, a safety committee, which ended up being the NCAA, to figure out how do we eliminate these, you know, skull fractures and death playing football. Well, the helmet was born. I think the first major evolution of the design was the plastic helmet. And so that drastically reduced skull fractures, you know, the polycarbonate shell. And that pretty much went unchanged for years and years. The padding material inside, you know, evolved and got better and better. But, you know, the hard plastic shell, you know, still remains for the most part. And then only recently have we figured out that, you know, instead of a one continuous hard shell, now the shells are compliant or multi-piece. And so that aids in what we call decoupling. And so you want, just kind of like your, if you're getting a car crash, right? You want the
crinkle zone.
Yeah. You want the crumple zone to begin to absorb energy before it moves you, the driver. So that kind of same principle applies to the football helmet or helmets in general. You want the helmet to start to absorb energy, move independently of your head for, you know, milliseconds or,
sure.
And then obviously it's going to take your head with it. But that, you know, these head impacts are only 5 to 10 milliseconds. So anytime you can increase the duration of the head impact, what do you think that does to the curves, the risk, the acceleration curves?
They're going to
flatten.
There's the
yeah,
way.
Yeah. So, you know, you want a long drawn out head impact when possible. And so we want the helmet to decouple. So we want it to absorb energy and start to move independently before it takes your head with it. Even if it's for, you know, half a millisecond, again, more time is better. And so yeah, you want the helmet to decouple. And so, yeah, these newer football shells, and as we're talking about, you know, those multi-piece or those compliant shells begin that process versus the, you know, one big hard continuous football helmet shell that I wore back in the 80s. Effects are hardly noticeable, but...
So, I mean, obviously you guys got your start in the football helmets, and then you moved on to everything from, you know, equestrian helmets to military helmets to, I have a question actually. Looking at the Virginia Tech lab things, it talks about soccer. Soccer doesn't wear helmets to my knowledge. What are the head testings and things? I assume heading the ball, like.
So they do wear headgear. You can call them helmets or you can call them soft headgear because they're not like your football helmet, American football, right? They're not hard plastic shells. They're soft. Compliant. Rugby players wear them. Flag football players wear them. Soccer players tend to wear the headband style. Because what we found is, you know, the worst type of injury scenario in flag football and soccer is when two players collide head to head.
Yeah.
Yeah. You bumped heads with somebody before.
I have. It's not pleasant.
No, not at all. And so they're starting to wear these headband styles, and a little bit of padding goes a long way. And so we rate the headgear, so we do bare head-to-head impacts with our head forms, and then we start applying, you know, headgear, the soft headgear, to one of the head forms and figure out how much did that headgear reduce those acceleration values. And so obviously the ones that do better get better ratings, but there's a lot of organizations, particularly in Texas 7-on-7 leagues, that mandate a Virginia Tech 4 or 5 star rated headgear. It makes a lot of sense from the insurance perspective. And,
sure.
You know, flag football is one of the fastest growing sports, male sports in high. Yeah. Because, you know, all the football teams, they play flag football in the spring when they're not playing football.
Right.
But now I think flag football is going to be an Olympic sport in 2028, I believe.
Wow.
And so there's a big push for that. You know, it's, you know, safer than tackle football in a lot of respects, but there's still a lot of head impacts.
Of course.
So, you know, these organizations mandate headgear, which makes sense. And there's a lot of youth leagues that mandate soccer headgear, these headband style, at least. And, you know, we're not going to eliminate all concussions, but we could reduce some. And more importantly, probably reduce the severity of some of these head impacts when you have a little bit of padding on your head.
Absolutely. I mean, and like you said, a little bit of padding goes a long way from skull on skull. Because again, I think everyone has headbutted someone on accident or on purpose at some point. And it's just, it rings your bell real good.
Yes, it does not feel good.
So again, my point there is just you guys, everything from these kind of minimalist headband styles all the way up through military and everything, and we're moving into construction. What are we finding? I know that we're just kind of launching this study now, but what are we looking to find? What are we testing? What are the parameters? Talk to me a little bit about this study we're launching.
Yeah, so the first big step is this is the part of the process for all the star ratings we do. So first of all, how do people hit their heads in a worksite environment? You know, what surfaces are they hitting? What's the angles? What's the velocity? Are they falling from height? You know, are they slip and falls? And, you know, we have a bunch of research that, you know, a good portion of these injuries are slips and falls, falls from ladders, falls from scaffolding. And so we're working with the organizations that funded the research to figure out, you know, get injury reports first, but video is really important. If we could capture video of some of these accidents, then we can, you know, do some advanced computer techniques to figure out quantify impact velocity. And so we need to figure all this out. So that's the first thing is, how do people hit their heads? And then after we know that, or, you know, kind of get our hands around some of these injury scenarios or a good portion of them, then we can come back to the lab and go, how do we best replicate those injury scenarios with our test equipment? You know, maybe we have a test rig that already represents those, or maybe we got to build one because we have a variety of those in here. And then the next step is, all right, so once we have a test protocol in hand to best simulate these real world accidents, then we acquire all these different commercially available safety helmets and we test them against that protocol. And obviously the ones that better reduce these rapid head accelerations are going to get better ratings. And then what's nice about this and what really makes it important is the certification standards are pass or fail. The test scenarios are not representative of real world accidents. And they only use linear acceleration as a criteria. And the criteria to pass is the point of skull fracture.
Pause there real quick. Let's pretend I understood everything you just said. Break that down a little bit more. So pass-fail, I've got you. So the criteria is pass-fail. Go through that again a little bit and explain for me.
Right. So for a helmet to be sold in the United States or any country for that matter, they all have to pass some sort of certification, right? Safety helmets are ANSI certified and maybe EN, depends on where you are in the world. But they all have to pass that basic certification. These certifications are pass or fail. The threshold to pass is the point of catastrophic head injury, which is typically somewhere around 250 to 275 Gs of linear acceleration.
So they'll keep you alive, but they won't necessarily keep you uninjured.
Right, which is critical, right? So that is the first step. Can the helmet protect against catastrophic head injury, right? And then we come along and we supplement those certifications with real world, sport specific, environment specific ratings based on how you actually hit your head in that environment. And we base it on concussion risk. So not that some of our tests, you know, so we have a test protocol and there'll be some high energy tests that are similar to the certifications because we need to test against that as well. But we'll have a broader range of test criteria, maybe like 4 locations and 3 energy levels on a helmet. Bike helmets are tested at 6 locations and 2 different energy levels. And so I don't know what it's going to be for safety helmets at this point in time, but it'll be several locations and a couple energy levels for sure. And then we're evaluating the helmet against real world accident scenarios, which makes it unique and makes it applicable. But then the best thing about it is the helmet manufacturers. So all they have to go on right now is that certification, that linear drop. Is it below 275? It passes. And there's not a lot of, you know, motivation for them to do more than just that, right? Because it passes, it's great, but we don't want it too bulky, et cetera. But now we come along and say, here's the blueprint to improve the helmets. Here's the locations, here's the energy levels, here's the type of test rig we're using. So you can use our test methodology as a blueprint to improve the helmets. And they will, because consumers are going to want to buy the best rated helmets, right? Because they're safer. And then the consumers win, the industry wins, and we win because we're, and it's part of our public service mission to, you know, reduce injuries, et cetera, et cetera. So, and that's how products keep getting better. And for example, when we first launched football helmets back in 2011, there was only 1 5-star rated helmet. And now you can't buy anything but a 5-star rated helmet. And the star scores are fantastic. They continue to improve. And you want, just so the audience knows, you want a low star score. Because the star score represents concussion risk. And then based on the score, it's kind of like golf. You know, the lowest score gets the highest paid, you know, out, gets paid more. So we want low star scores. And then the scores really just put you in general categories of a 5-star, 4-star, 3-star. But the star score is really what drives everything. And that's, you know, every star score is unique based on that sport or that environment, because the way we test is different. But it's really based on those, you know, linear and rotational head accelerations based on the test procedures.
Great partners make a difference in any industry, but ours are the best. So let's take a moment for the Milwaukee Minute.
Milwaukee Tool is dedicated to providing a full range of trade-focused solutions that increase confidence and productivity on the job site. One example of that commitment is OneKey, our connectivity platform that puts job site management into your hands, allowing you to track what matters through the industry's largest Bluetooth tracking community. This purpose-built tracking hardware and software gives you the ability to customize, track, and manage your tool inventory, fundamentally changing the way you interact with your tools. Together, the OneKey app and the IoT-connected power tools deliver superior task-specific power, precision, quality, and repeatability to help you and your crew work smarter. The free app grows with your business, addressing inventory pain points, increasing productivity, and decreasing downtime. Learn more about the OneKey platform at onekey.milwaukeetool.com.
So you mentioned the test procedures. I was thinking about that. It's probably pretty hard to get someone to volunteer to get hit with a bat to see if they feel it. Like,
yeah.
are you just dropping pistons on different crunkle? Like, what are the testing parameters?
Yeah, so if you went to our webpage, under technical documents for each of the 9 star ratings, you'll see a methodology paper. And it basically just tells you exactly how we're going to test those helmets. But we have a variety of test rigs. We have a pendulum impactor. We have a linear impactor. We have drop towers. We have the head-to-head setup for like soccer and flag football. We have an inverted pendulum we can use. So there's what we try to do is the physics behind each impact is somewhat unique. So in other words, the way you fall off your horse or the way you hit your head in football, they're different. The physics behind them are different. You know, 2 players versus you hitting an infinite mass like the ground, well, that's going to be very different. And so we want to best represent those. And so we use different test rigs. And so, if you went to YouTube, you'd see, back in the COVID days, we did some virtual tours and we went through every test rig. So you can see all that. That's online easily. It's just Google Virginia Tech Helmet Lab and go to YouTube and you'll see all kinds of stuff.
I'm going to do that because this is fascinating to me. This is, again, I'm in the military. I ride a motorcycle. I work on construction sites. There's lots of different helmets and they all feel different because they're all built for very different, like you said, levels of impact, levels of.
That's correct. Yep.
So it's fascinating what you guys are doing. You just talked a little bit about construction. Do you guys make pre-assumption? Like, here's what we're going to find. What guesses do you guys have of areas of test?
Well, I can say we've done a lot of preliminary research with safety helmets. And so we know like type 1 is just not, they're not built or made for impact protection. There's no padding in them, right?
Yeah, it's just a harness. It's a harness attached to plastic clips.
Safety helmets do have some impact protection, which is generally expanded foam, EPS, right? Expanded polystyrene,
sure.
Which provides some level of protection. But, you know, there's a lot more materials out there. I have a whole page of different types of materials. There's 720 helmets. Has this structure called Hexago, which is like a honeycomb type structure, which it's more rubbery and plastic. There's, you know, Isoblox has a formula, D3O, which is used in a lot of military helmets. There's tons of different padding materials, structures, designs that can all enhance an improved impact performance.
Sure.
EPS is cheap and really cheap. It's holds up to, you know, temperature, moisture. So, you know, that's why a lot of helmets use those, but there is other things you can use. And so we'll see an evolution happen within this environment for sure.
And these, the test that, you know, we're just kicking off in the preliminary studies, you'll be testing, obviously, as you said, both the old style kind of hat that we think of, as well as the new more alpine style with the chin strap and the narrower form factor, I assume?
Yeah, not exactly sure how we're going to do that, but yes, well, everything will be included at some point. And we just know that type 1's not, they're not meant for impact protection, so we don't expect them to do very well. And then, you know, the safety helmets do have chin straps because, you know, that helps the helmet stay in place. I should mention this, that, you know, we talked about the decoupling effect. So, and I get a lot of questions about helmet fit. The most important thing about helmet fit is, does the helmet stay in place for that initial impact, right? So kind of like a bike helmet. Well, you want it loose enough because you want it to be comfortable. But as you flip over the handlebars, you don't want the helmet to, you know, be displaced prior to that impact. You know, once you have the impact, if it ends up sliding down inside your head a little bit, that's okay. That probably helps the situation. So that's the most important part of helmet fit is, does it stay in place for that initial impact? So, and obviously football players have a very tight coupling because, you know, they have lots of head impacts and maybe multiple in the same play. So they can't have a loose fitting helmet because it, you know, they don't want it to get jarred loose, even though they do fall off, which is still amazing to me. Some of those, yeah, the guy come off the field, his helmet fell off. I'm like, how did you got 4 chin straps on there? But it happens, right? So
here's a kind of more just personal curiosity. I hadn't planned on this question, but it's sort of curious with what we're talking about. You know, a football player's helmet will have impact X number of times per game, X number of games per week, month, career, season. Other helmets, like motorcycle helmets, will stay. After you've been in an accident, throw this away. Do not use this twice. Like, it's a single-use item, as expensive as it is. Is that to do with the crinkle zones? Is that to do... What determines whether something can take multiple impacts or that single-use, one catastrophic injury per... What's the determining factor?
So football and hockey helmets are designed to be multiple impact helmets. They can withstand impact after impact without permanent deformation. So the padding materials they use in a football helmet and a hockey helmet are going to be drastically different than a single impact helmet. And the reason for a single impact helmet is, you know, you don't typically wreck on your bike. You don't typically get hit in the head or fall on the job site.
Correct.
And so the materials they use can be lighter weight and not as durable as a multi-impact helmet. And they're not designed to last year after year after year with multiple impacts, right? So it just a football helmet weighs about 5 pounds.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's a lot of weight. And it's the most advanced helmet on the planet, American football helmet. They're fantastic. But, you know, you're not going to wear that on the job sites. 5 pounds, it's a little heavy for most people.
Really fast.
If you're a football player, maybe not. But, so they're designed differently based on what's the risk, you know, of me getting in an accident. Right. It's pretty infrequent, you know, whether if you're an equestrian rider, you don't fall off your horse every day. And so they're designed for, you know, that occasional or hopefully never head impact. But there's materials that, again, there's materials that can be like, you know, there's wave cell, there's what's the other one? Corroid. There's all kinds of these materials that can be used that some are multi-impact, some are not. But yeah, I think you'll see a lot of changes in the safety helmet environment, you know, as we launch our ratings and as things progress. So
speaking of that, which leads me perfectly to the next thing, you know, if you had a crystal ball, if you could look into the future, how close are we getting to the height of this is as good as we can get. This is as thin as we can get. Outside of don't hit your head. What's the future of helmets?
That is a great question. You know, the American football helmet, I think we're getting pretty close. I mean, without drastically changing the geometry of the head, or the helmet, you know, making them a lot bigger, which then they're not as functional, right? I mean, how big can your football helmet be before you can't turn and catch a football, right? So those helmets are fantastic. The star scores are under 1.0 for some of the top five or so. And just to give you an idea what that means for football, the star score represents the average number of concussions you would get wearing that helmet model if exposed to the seasonal average of 420 head impacts, which are modeled by our test procedures here in the lab.
So the average football player has 420 head impacts per season.
It's probably less now because people modified a lot of rules, but that's what we came out with way back when we launched the research. But it's still probably up there. Obviously, you know, when I played high school football, we hit every day.
Right.
You don't do that anymore. So, but that's what it's based on in the test procedures. So that's a lot of head impacts. But again, the star scores are under 1.0.
So one concussion for every 420 impacts.
On average, right. Understood. On average, right. So per season, right?
Per season, right.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah. So those star scores are fantastic. And if, you know, when you guys look at some of the videos online, you'll see some of the helmet testing. And it's just fantastic how these American football helmets perform. I mean, it's impressive. If you looked inside, you'd see the padding materials are super thick. You're like, I get it. Yeah, they're just in a wide variety of structures and geometries, you know, to attenuate both linear and rotational head movements. So they're fantastic. So that's a great question. I think, you know, most of the sports have, and we continue to see lots of improvements in bike helmet ratings. We're going to rescale both of those, bike and football, because, you know, it's kind of like a 5-star rated safety for a car, right? Well, 10 years ago, it's not the same as a 5-star today, right? So there's new thing. You have to have airbags everywhere and you have sensors and all these things that keep evolving. So it's time for us to rescale what's considered a 5-star. But again, the star score is still going to be the star score and it drives everything.
And now the star, correct me if I'm wrong, it's not star like 5 stars on Amazon. It's an acronym. It's summation of tests and analysis of risk.
For the analysis of risk. Okay. Yeah. And so what that really means is, for example, so for football, we use 4 locations and 3 energy levels to test a helmet. So that's 12 test conditions, right?
Sure.
So for each test condition, we're going to calculate a risk of concussion based on the linear and rotational head accelerations from our risk function over 2 million data points. And then we're going to multiply that by some sort of weighting factor or exposure number. Like, you know, do you hit the front of your head at low energy a lot more frequently than the side at high energy? Well, the answer is yes. And so that scenario is going to get weighted differently. So risk of concussion times that weighting factor is going to give us something that we call an incidence value. And so we do that for every test condition. So then we add all the incidence values up to get an overall star score. And then the star score is the summation of tests for the analysis of risk. And that's what represents concussion risk for that particular sport.
And we're wanting it to be as low as possible because that is the number of concussions over the average of the number of impacts expected.
Well, every sport's different.
That's so what I'm saying. Expected within that within that parameter, right?
Yeah. And so there's different ways we do it based on the sport. Like we know where football players get hit in the head. Other ways we do that is we try to balance the locations and the energy levels of a helmet to give, because you don't know, like if you're cycling, you don't know how you're going to hit your head. You could hit infinite number of ways, right? We had to go back and do some damage replication studies, et cetera. So we try to balance those six tests or those 12 test conditions. And so we weight the helmet. You know, when you get hit in the front of the head at low energy, humans can tolerate that. We don't get concussed. And so we try to balance each test location. So we weight, it's not an exposure number, it's a weighting value, just to kind of balance out the whole helmet. So helmets are continued to design to take things into consideration. Like you don't need to add a lot of padding at the forehead if we don't get concussed like that. Right. So, but the side of the head is already a high risk because we don't tolerate that as humans very well. And so we try to balance and do the weightings. But again, if you go to the technical documents for each sport, you'll read through there, you go, I get it now. And so it gets a little technical, but.
So where are we on the process for the construction helmets of figuring those parameters out? The dropped on your head versus fall off a ladder versus bang your head on a pipe while walking in a low clearance. Like where are we on are you still designing the experiments? Are you conducting the experiments? Where are we on that process?
We are in the information gathering stage. Like how are people hitting their heads? That is the first step. And so we are working with the organizations. They're collecting injury information, injury data for us. And we're doing our own little side projects as well. Like, all right, how does this look? You know, what can we quantify some of these things? So that's first step. And that's where we are since we just launched.
No, of course. Right. And that's why we wanted to get, you know, we're obviously, you know, we're the Association of Union Constructors. We're very interested to see how this goes and how this affects. We're, you know, head injuries are a big deal. And we've been following that ever since, well, with football, as people started becoming more and more aware of, you know, head injuries are a bad thing and they have long, long effects. So keeping our heads safe in some of these environments is extremely important. So I think we're all excited to see what those tests will be and how and what we find.
Yeah, if your users have video of some sort of injury scenario, we don't want any personal information, right? If we have just a video of some sort of fall, slip, or head impact during a work environment, we'd love to have those. And so each organization is starting to collect these, and they can scrub them of all personal information. We don't need that. But an injury report's good. But you don't know the full picture until you see it. Like, did you hit your shoulder before you hit your head, or was it straight on full head impact without any, you know, braking or bracing prior to that? So we don't know that. The injury reports don't. I hit my head. Well, did you hit your back first and then your head, you know, kind of a whiplash thing, or did you actually land on your head? And so those are extremely helpful.
I can only imagine the answer to this is going to be no, but you talked about at the very, very beginning that you started off by putting sensors in helmets and just gauging. Now, obviously, you're going to have a lot of data after a single game. You're going to have a ton of data after a season. Is there any chance you'll be, you know, putting sensors in helmets and sending them out on job sites just to see what the kind of rustle about an impact is going to be? Or is it just too infrequent?
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen. It'd be expensive and probably a waste of time because who are you going to put the sensors in and they have to volunteer to be a subject, but you know, you don't want them to fall.
You don't want it. Right.
But you don't.
it's exactly what I say. I was like, I can't imagine that. Yes, absolutely. We're going to talk to that guy and say, now fall from the, we can't do that. But
what we would do actually is we would go to that environment and use our dummies, head forms, or the full test dummy. And then we'd go, all right, let's drop that thing off a ladder and make sure we hit the head first, or, you know, kind of represent what we think is happening. And then, you know, we'd collect our data and then we'd have some sort of, you know, we could quantify head impact velocity and those kinds of things, so we can come back to the lab and replicate those in a more, you know, representative way or consistent way.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you did say the one thing of if you know, the listeners are out there and you're from a job site and have a video, absolutely send that to you at Virginia Tech. Is there a mailbox for that? How do you get it to you?
They can send it to me, but each organization is collecting those too. So you could probably go to your, I don't know, your supervisor, and I'm not sure who's doing it for the Association of Union Construction.
That would be Alex Kopp.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but they can send them to me too. bmiller21@vt.edu. I'm on the webpage. So, and we'll start cataloging all these and, you know, put them in a folder and we'll start reviewing, et cetera, et cetera. So it all helps.
Yeah, we're all pretty excited about this. We're, you know, you guys have an incredible lab and have done incredible work, and getting some of that data and that level of observation and analysis into head injuries for construction sites, it's going to help our safety. It's going to help our guys, and I think we're all pretty excited about it. Is there anything else you want to plug? You want to talk about any other things? You talked about the website, and there's some great videos on YouTube that we can check out. The technical data on the website. Anything else people can do to learn more or share information to advance the cause?
Yeah, I think just letting people know that, hey, this is coming and this will help manufacturers improve the helmets based on what we find, because we're going to have a representative test protocol based on real world accident scenarios. And so that'll improve the safety. And, you know, number one thing is to wear the helmet, right? I think that, yeah. So wearing a helmet does make a difference, particularly with the severity. You may not eliminate all concussions, but the severity can certainly be diminished by wearing a high quality helmet. Yeah. Kind of like cars, car safety. Not all cars are as safe as, you know, a Fiat's not as safe as a Ford F-150, right?
Sure.
And a lot of crash scenarios. Same thing with helmets, you know, just because they all pass the basic certification, there's going to be a wide array of performance differences. So we'll tease that out.
I definitely appreciate your time. We went a little long today, but it was such a great conversation. And so I have so many more follow-ups. I could talk to you about this stuff for much longer, but I want to give you a let you get on with your day. But thank you so much for joining us today and talking about this.
You're welcome. Yeah. Let me know if you have follow-up questions. Happy to answer and respond to the community as well. So it's going to be great for you guys.
Thank you so, so much. Hopefully we'll get to talk again in a few months to a year or so when it's all wrapping up next year.
Yeah, we'll do a couple presentations on updates with the organizations, and then we'll have, you know, put some slides together and figure out this is where we are, this is what we found, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll do some updates.
We will definitely be reaching out for you again when that happens. So thank you so much for your time today.
You've just listened to the Construction User 2.0 podcast from the Association of Union Constructors. Don't forget to subscribe to get all future episodes of what is going on and what is current in the union construction and maintenance industry.